to the 174th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Thanks for listening. So I am still on the training route for Ironman Chattanooga. I've hit four bike rides this week, I guess by Sunday, four runs, two swims. I'm still doing my weight sessions, getting three in, starting to actually enjoy the weight sessions and look forward to them, seeing some benefit coming around, feeling like my body's actually getting in shape. So that's, all very positive. I'm still doing my foam rolling and active release. So I'm trying to keep on top of things this time. So hopefully I'll make it through the training session and get the start line feeling very healthy. I am very blessed this week. I have my registered dietitian in town with me today, and actually for the week. We're getting ready to go up to the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine conference next week. So if any of you all are going, I hope to see you. If you see me, say hi. I won't be speaking. I'll be learning and listening and enjoying everybody else. The office, we're finishing up a challenge this week that has combined the challenges from the last 3 weeks. So we had, Addy has put together little mini workouts that are circuits that we can get movements in for people because it's very, very important to keep moving your body for your body's sake, for your heart's sake, and as we're going to find out a little bit later, your brain's sake. I am finally joined by Team Scherzi. We have a connection. There's a little bit of issues with the connection at time, and I'll try to smooth those out the best I can, but it was a really, really good interview. If you haven't read their book, which is The Alzheimer's Solution, A Breakthrough Program to Prevent and Reverse the Symptoms of Cognitive Decline at Every Age by Dean and Aisha Scherzi. And if you, we'll have the reference to the book in the show notes, but they're on the web as teamscherzi.com. They have a wonderful website with a lot of resources, publications, and what they're up to. They are the co-directors of the Loma Linda Alzheimer's Prevention Program, as well as doing research and writing, and their book is absolutely fabulous, so you will enjoy that. So I highly suggest that you check that out, and hope you enjoy the interview. I think some of the interesting things that we've seen in the office this week, because we have level one, level two, and level three nutrition classes, after people get out of the first level, we kind of think that people have a handle on plant-based nutrition. It still can be very, very confusing as far as what's healthy out there and what's not healthy out there. And a lot of people are still struggling with a lot of pain and inflammation. And when we review their nutrition, we find that it's not actually getting them the benefit that it could be. And a lot of things that are really packaged to make you think that they're a little more convenient and that they look even healthy aren't necessary. You know, one of the things that came up today were these organic vegan waffles. And they're supposed to be whole grain. And when you start to look in them, the first ingredient is just plain old flour. And the second ingredient is oil and a bunch of additives. And then there's a little bit of whole grains mixed in, but they're anything but good. And if you take something like that has very little fiber in it for breakfast and just put a few strawberry slices on, you're certainly not getting the antioxidants that you could. So those are, just little examples of, what people maybe go out and eat beans and rice and think that they're doing well, but yet they're not getting the greens. And if you go out and get beans, a lot of times they're made with lard or other oils, certainly high salt. The same way with rice. We don't think that rice in a restaurant is going to be bad for us, but a lot of times there's oil in it because they wanted to keep it fluffy and not stick together and be easy to serve. So, you know, it's easy to get sidetracked with some of these things that we think we're doing okay, maybe eating more starches, but not getting the greens that we should be getting the antioxidants. So I think, again, it's really important to review what you're eating and make sure that you're getting as nutrient dense and covering all the steps as far as what you should get every day. And we certainly want everybody to get the greens and the fruit in and those antioxidants. And if, and stay away from the things that are processed, no matter what the front of the box tells us, you know, turn it around and look at the ingredients because you may be surprised of what is actually in there. So I'm not going to delay getting into this interview because I know a lot of people have been looking forward to it for some time. So
just a little introduction. Dr. Dean Scherzi, MD, PhD, is co-director of the Alzheimer Prevention Program at Loma Linda University. Dean trained in neurology at Georgetown University School of Medicine. He completed fellowships in neurodegenerative diseases and dementia at the NIH and at UC San Diego. He holds a PhD in healthcare leadership with a focus on community health from Andrews University. Dr. Aisha Scherzi, MD, is a neurologist and co-director as well of the Alzheimer Prevention Program. She leads the lifestyle program for prevention of neurological diseases. She has a dual training in preventive medicine and neurology from Loma Linda University, and trained in vascular neurology and the fellowship in that, as well as epidemiology at Columbia. She's also the culinary artist of the crew and director of the researches, or some of the recipes that are on the website. So I think you'll enjoy the interview, and without further ado, here is Dean Scherzi.
Well, I'd like to welcome, after a couple of reschedules, Team Scherzi. Dean and Aisha, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
So glad to be connected.
It's nice. So, you know, I was very impressed with your book, The Alzheimer's Solution, A Breakthrough Program to Prevent and Reverse the Symptoms of Cognitive Decline at Every Age. You both have extensive bios.
No, we trained there. Well, part of our training was at UC San Diego. We're currently the co-directors of Brain Health and Alzheimer's Prevention Program at Loma Linda University, which is in Southern California. Prior to that, we were at Cedars-Sinai, but we decided to move back to Loma Linda to study population health and specifically nutrition and brain health and lifestyle.
So your book was very interesting, and I loved how it was broken down. Nutrition, exercise, unwind, restore, optimize, research. Maybe to start in a little bit with the exercise part of it. I do a nutrition class here in the office, and we talk a lot about exercise, and we have a wellness program, and weight training appears to be important for brain health as well as cardio. But it also appears that and maybe you can shed some light on it, that it consistency is really, really important, over a 6-month period to start to see benefits.
Yeah. A lot of what we talk about is actually contiguous with what you talk about. It's, the heart and the brain are connected, and that's something that seems to be intuitive and obvious now. But for decades, there was a disconnect between the brain and the rest of the body, as though it was a magical the element apart from the rest of the body. But it's the same. It's the contiguous. It's a little bit more energy hungry than the rest of the body. I mean, this little 3-pound organ, which is about 2% of the body's weight, consumes up to 25% of body's energy. There are animals that have big brains, but the percentage and the ratio of energy utilization is much higher for the human brain. And as such, that means that it's the same elements that work with the heart, but much more so in the brain, in the sense that the vascular assaults that take place in the rest of the body, they also take place in the brain, but it affects the brain much more so. The oxidative damage, the inflammatory process, the regulation, the lipid dysregulation, it's the same processes, but the brain is under much greater assault. And the way out is the same as well. The things that lower inflammation, the things that lower glucose dysregulation, the things that affect lipid dysregulation also affects the brain. But when it comes to exercise, there seems to be a little bit another element when it comes to the brain. The billions of vascular processes that feed this energy-hungry organ seem to go through a massive evolution when we get older. There is more blood pressure needed. There is more continuous and contiguous blood pressure that's needed, that's provided by legs. The biggest pump in the body. The legs are also a very, very important source of pump for the rest of the body, but especially for the brain.
You cut out at, yeah, so let's go back. So the legs are the source. This is the key in exercise because they pump so well.
Yes, they do. The legs are the biggest pump in the body and also the biggest area of metabolism. So when it comes to glucose and lipid metabolism, the legs are a major source. And then the third purpose of legs, because of the growth factors, BDNF and GDNF are driven by leg exercises. So that's why if you're going to do any aerobic or anaerobic exercise, it should involve the legs. So we tell people, our patients, you know, you could be doing half an hour of aerobic exercise and sitting the rest of the day and you will negate the benefit. So get up every hour and also do some mini squats and some leg strengthening because it seems to have a direct correlation with brain size and function. So, leg strength seems to be important.
That's, you know, I'm smiling because my son-in-law is a strength and conditioning coach. And the family saying is squat, you must. And so he'll be happy to hear that he is, I think he squats over 500 pounds. So I think he's going to be bragging about a big brain, I believe.
Absolutely.
I don't think our patients need to squat that much, but they should have stronger legs. Absolutely.
And what about the consistency of, I guess, the consistency of movement in general?
Right. The data keeps coming back over and over again that shows that, you know, it has to be done consistently and more than what we thought we needed. A lot of patients come in and say they walk the neighborhood, but, you know, we say that's wonderful, but that's just meditation. You really need to get tired and you need to rev up your heart rate. So, 20 to 30 minutes of cardio or aerobic exercise, about 4 to 5 days a week on a regular basis is key, because the sedentary behavior that is, quite dominant in the society, it completely negates the amount of work that we put into exercise. So consistency is a must.
We also have a magical component to our thinking as human beings. Well, we're not going to get into the details of that, but anthropomorphism. We give human values to things that don't have those kind of values. For example, I ate well the whole day, the whole week. I can really, splurge now on the weekend. You can definitely do that, but don't think that it doesn't have the consequences. You can work out a month in a row, but then sit the next month. That has consequences. So you really have to stay consistent. And that consistency is the habit part. And what we pride in our book is the habit element. Me being a neurobehaviorist, habits can be built, but overcoming bad habits that were set in place in our basal ganglia during our teenage years and before is going to be harder than you think. So you really have to start disassembling the bad habits one at a time and replacing them with good habits one at a time. And consistent exercise is one of the essential ones when it comes to consistent good habits.
Yeah, I saw a picture on your website with you and your family doing karate. So apparently you're starting that with your family.
Yes. No, definitely. The earlier, the better. And it's a great exercise for the entire family.
As long as your wife doesn't kick you in the head because she's got long legs than you.
That happened. Head was in the way.
So wear a helmet when you're
when you're doing Taekwondo with Aisha Sherzai. wear a helmet.
All right. I'm going to write that down. Make sure that's in the show notes, because that's probably really important. Well, I have a personal question. Over the years, I do marathons, Ironman triathlons, and typically during those races, you have taken a source of calories, and, we take in these goo gels, which are just sugars. And over the last couple of years, I've tried to replace that more with something that has, like a watermelon or something that has, a whole foods component. But, for 24 hours when you're exercising and you're taking these sugar products, what do you think that does with inflammation?
Inflammation seems to be an acute process, as you know. It definitely has a chronic component, but definitely an acute component. One high sugar meal seems to immediately put into place a whole cascade of inflammation that actually even affects amyloid deposition. So we just did a paper, on nationwide paper on NHANES, on insulin resistance and cognition. Not even diabetes. So one of the things we did was we excluded patients that had diabetes, but had consistent elevated sugar levels, or they had insulin resistance. And even at that level, there is significant cognitive decline over time. So, and when you have these peaks in sugar, let me step back a little. The whole discussion we always have with nutrition, we've had problem in both directions, both as far as meat and lipid people, and then the sugar people. And we tell them it's actually both. I'm sorry to say, but we have to avoid sugar and you have to avoid saturated fats, because both of them seem to have a common denominator, common pathway to inflammation. And a simple meal, one simple meal of high glycemic food seemed to significantly increase your inflammation that immediately leads to even amyloid deposition. So we have to be a little bit aware of things. I love the word you brought in earlier, which is consistency. We have to become a little consistent with our diets, with our size patterns, because that's how the body operates. Let's take sleep for that matter. Sleep is, we found from our research that sleep is probably the most important part of your day. And that sounds paradoxical, but it is. We wouldn't have sacrificed 8 hours of safety if it wasn't that important. And one of its major functions, besides memory consolidation, is detoxification. So the body is unforgiving. You can't make up for the sleepless nights on the weekend. One night of bad sleep and your inflammatory markers, your cortisol levels, and the amyloid level in patients who are at risk goes up significantly. So, that's the bad news. The good news is the answer is not all or none. It's not binary. You're completely whole food, plant-based, and you're doing marathon a day or nothing. It's actually every small increment of change seem to have a positive effect over time.
And, when we talk, a lot of people, they say, okay, well, they're okay with avoiding white sugar, but what about maple syrup? What about agave? Same thing, because it's a high glycemic food. So we really want to avoid as much of these sweeteners as possible.
Absolutely. I think the concept of, moving away from carbs are good or carbs are bad, and, looking at the nuances of high glycemic foods versus low glycemic foods is important, and identifying high glycemic foods and trying to minimize them as much as possible. It doesn't matter if it's natural. It doesn't matter if honey's natural. It is high glycemic. There are a lot of things that are natural that are not good for you, but, you would want to avoid them. So I agree with you.
Great. I also was reading that, it's not unlike a cancer, our brain health, that the deterioration often starts 20 years, 15, 20 years before overt symptoms start. So,
definitely.
So, waiting till you're 65 to worry about Alzheimer's is really not the best way to go.
But keeping young people motivated to make change is very difficult. So the way to switch or bring a paradigm shift is not so much for the younger people, not so much avoiding Alzheimer's, but actually realizing that for a huge percentage of population, brain and cognition become stagnant after your 20s. In fact, there's decline in memory, There's decline in processing. There's decline across the board except vocabulary. But there is a separate group of people that there's continual growth of cognition. And that's dependent on lifestyle. So for the younger population, switching the discussion from Alzheimer's, which is so far away and will not move the target or move the needle, but switching it to the fact that you could be one of 95% of the population that starts having decline in their 20s, and and you will not reach your peak as you would want it, be it in business or anything, unless you change your lifestyle and become part of the 5% that continually grows their cognition throughout life. That's, I think, the conversation we have to bring to the younger people, because Alzheimer's is not in their radar when they're in their 20s and 30s.
No, everyone thinks they're invincible. You know, or again, you can out exercise any of these lifestyle diseases by doing whatever weekend warrior activity that you want to do, and then abusing your body afterwards with pizza and donuts, right?
Or alcohol.
Yes, exactly. Pizza. So, are you all? Do you all do clinical practice? You know, I mean. In my office, it used to be I did consults. People would come to see me, and they really didn't see the nutrition thing coming at them until they got into the door. And now that my program is based, you know, mainly on nutrition as a part of lifestyle diseases, they kind of know what's going to happen. What about in your practice? Do you see people coming to you because they already have neurological decline? And how do you approach them?
We see the entire spectrum, ranging from subjective cognitive impairment, you know, people who are concerned or may have had a family history of a loved one going through dementia and wanting to be evaluated genetically or otherwise, to frank dementia, you know, patients who are completely debilitated by the disease. So we see clinical focus has been on mild cognitive impairment and vascular cognitive impairment, especially in people who have a large or a very big cardiovascular disease burden. So people with diabetes and cholesterol and high blood pressure, mostly modifiable risk factors. And they go through a slew of tests, obviously, for diagnostic, which includes blood and imaging and neuropsychological tests. But, you know, one of the most important elements that we have in our clinic is, you know, getting a very good history of their lifestyle. So questionnaires for nutrition and exercise and stress and cognitive activity and sleep. We are affiliated with a sleep lab, and we identify and eliminate sleep apnea and other sleep disorders as well. And at the end, they're left with, you know, a particular diagnosis, if there is any, and also a lifestyle intervention plan. So we address nutrition, you know, teach them the basic elements of a whole food plant-based diet, and continuously keep connected with them and go down to the details of giving them recipes and shopping lists and how to clean their pantry and how to clean the refrigerator, so on and so forth. Exercise programs, same thing. Looking at their resources, their limitations, their strengths. So it's not a cookie cutter approach, and we focus on habit building and starting incrementally of what works for the individual and moving on. We also have a lifestyle intervention program where we have two groups. It's a study where we longitudinally follow people with mild cognitive impairment and another group that are intensively involved in elements of lifestyle, which I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. And I heard you mention, do medications play a role in the practice at this point?
Absolutely. I mean, whenever people come to us, they think that we are against medicine. We definitely are not. I mean, but we say that medicine should serve as a bridge, but not an end all be all. The way it is used in the medical and regular medical practice, blood pressure can never be eliminated with just medication. It has to be lifestyle. But if somebody has a blood pressure of 160, lifestyle is going to take its time. So you have to be on blood pressure medicine. We manage it. Same thing with cholesterol. And then lifestyle, as it takes its effect, then we slowly take them off their medication. So it's only in that context that we use medication. And they have to have the understanding that our goal is to take them off of the medicine eventually. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I heard you talking on another podcast, and, you know, people talk about, you know, we see, an older population here in Florida, and you go to the hospital and everybody's got their word search book and their crossword puzzle. And, you know, they hang on to those as the key to their health.
And that's great. It might have and some data now shows that there is some benefit to that as well. We just did a meta-analysis, which is the most painful form of research you can imagine, of brain activities and mild cognitive impairment. So we collected all the data and then ran it. And what we found was even those activities, simple, you know, activities such as following a dot on a screen, which initially we were quite incredulous as far as them working, they have an effect. And there are some studies from Florida, actually, that came that in one study that with games from 1990s, actually, it reduced cognitive decline significantly. But in general, it's the more complex activities that are most beneficial. And it makes sense because the more complex activities involve all of the brain. So learning a new musical instrument, it's not just, you know, adding some scores to 9 in a series of boxes. That doesn't involve entire brain. But musical instrument, you're reading notes, that's the language centers, you're processing it, it's the frontal lobe, you're looking at it, it's the occipital lobe, your motor skills are being challenged, as well as your emotional limbic system. So you're including the entire brain. Complex activities are much better, and complex activities that you actually push forward, meaning challenge yourself, seem to confer the greatest advantage and greatest protection, as much as 40% to 43% reduction in Alzheimer's risk by just these activities.
So are people doing themselves any favors when they retire early to go fishing?
In fact, the greatest decline is among those who are very active mentally, and then they retire and basically vegetate. The decline is massive among that population, and it makes sense because our protection is in our connectivity. Our neurons, 87 billion neurons, plus or minus, the number is not as important. That's why a lot of times the volume of...
I lost the volume of neurons.
But connectivity does not... Each neuron can make a few connections.
Okay.
Or as many as 30,000 connections. Now, that's remarkable. That's where the protection lies. And it's when you don't do the things you used to do that made those connections, they quickly retract, and the decline is massive. So one of our biggest advice is, first of all, don't retire if you love your job, and if you do retire, continue to be active mentally at the same level that you are, but around things you love now. So that's the critical factor. In fact, more important. That mental activity is more protective than any food or any exercise. As much as we would love to say it's food or exercise, but challenging mental activity confers the greatest protection.
Very interesting. How has this information changed your lives?
For us, it was a personal journey, to be honest. And we saw our grandparents go through this, and we saw how our families got affected by this devastating disease. We have, you know, Dean and I both have been plant-based for over 15 years now, and we try to incorporate as much as restorative sleep as possible. You know how it is with our busy lives, but you know the most wonderful thing is our children are now owning it too. We have two children, 13 and 11 years old, Alex and Sophia, and you know they're plant-based. They take exercise, you know, seriously, and make sure that we unwind and pay attention to stress management. So mindfulness and meditation is a big part of our lives. And as far as cognitive activity is concerned, you know, it's so much fun being in this field with research, with promoting this concept of public health and awareness about Alzheimer's disease and brain health. And the kids are involved in that too. Matter of fact, they actually started writing a book about it, and it's going to get published about how do you keep your brain healthy from a very early age on. moving forward. So yes, it definitely has affected it. And at the core, it's all about planning. I think all of these elements fall in place if we spend some time planning it. So, you know, one of the weekend days is just dedicated to food and planning the food for the rest of the week and exercising and meditating and mindfulness and moving forward.
What did you say, Dean? I missed that part.
It's about planning all this. I mean, that's the unwind part. The unwind part is a good stress, bad stress, but how do you bad stress is you have to plan. You really, there's no way in a busy lifestyle that we all lead that if you don't plan that you're going to exercise every day or at least 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to eat healthy food in an environment where healthy food is not available all the time ubiquitously. Or that you're going to de-stress and unwind and find time for meditation or mindfulness. There's no way unless you plan. So at the core is planning and at the core is purpose. Because then purpose actually leads everything else. That has to happen in the families. And if it's not, it's a one-off activity. Today it's the vitamin du jour. The next day it's the superfood of the day. The next day it's the diet of the day that you heard on some podcast. But it has to become a lifestyle. And that takes planning.
Yeah, it's I think about the age, and we all have a cell phone, and nobody ever unplugs, and everybody's going in different directions. And I think it is important to reach younger people earlier, before again everybody gets down this rabbit hole. Or, I don't have time. I don't have time. I don't have time. And then you try to dial the clock back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. And, you're obviously in a great area. Being from Loma Linda, one of the blue zones, I suspect you see some people well into their hundreds or early hundreds. I have three people in my hundreds in my practice. One is still driving. One of them is still driving. And the other one is pretty sharp. And the other one, but they're hanging on.
That's amazing. No, we see them right on a regular basis. If you go to the gym, we have a Drayson Center, a big gym in Loma Linda that's affiliated with the School of Public Health. At 5 a.m., you get to see a lot of centenarians there, and they beat you. They beat you in cycling and in weightlifting, and it's such a wonderful view and a sight to see everybody involved and really taking their health seriously and, thriving, not just necessarily fighting a disease, but just thriving. And they don't talk about their medication. They don't worry about their health. They just live. So it's very inspiring.
Yes, a positive mental attitude goes a long way, correct?
It does. That's the cognitive component. That's the attitude and motivation and purpose component. A lot of people, if you've read the data, Dan Buettner is a good friend of ours from Blue Zones. One of the most important thing is all these communities or populations or groups that live healthfully, it's around purpose, be it religion or be it their community and family or be it some task or job. If you have purpose and then you create an organized life around it, then you can achieve great health. Without that, it's a rabbit hole.
One last thing that I want to touch on, and you probably are ready, what's coming, is the ketogenic and intermittent fasting. And there's a lot of things coming on and a lot of groups you see on Facebook that, it almost saddens me because it, again, people will do a fast of sorts, and then in between the fast, eat unhealthy. Or eat high fat foods or this bullet coffee to help them get through their fast.
It makes us sad too because it speaks to that. Although it doesn't sound like easy, but it is an easy answer because it's a certain part of your day that you sacrifice, but not the rest. You can stay consistent with your habits, the habits that were set early by culture, by family, by teenage, dysfunctional behavior. But that's comforting because it's no change. Yet to change lifestyle, to go to a whole food plant-based and work out and all that, it's a significant consistent change. That takes a lot more not even physical, but psychological challenge. So I think most of these are just like every other diet that has come and gone. These are the newest thing that where you have to change one element or one period of time or one food or one vitamin, but then the core of your life is not changed. It's you know, I say the biggest problem in humanity is confirmation bias. You find things that for the most part confirms you the way you've been living, and you've changed one thing so that you feel like there's a contribution or a sacrifice from you. There's, if you don't do the hard work, let's talk about ketogenic. Two sides of this. I mean, not even paleo. Let's just ketogenic. Ketogenic diet, people feel better immediately. Why? Because it's an easy, quick energy source to the cell. Ketone bodies don't have to do the hard work that glucose, this poor molecule, has to do. If somebody looks at how glucose gets into the cell, they'll really feel bad for it. This poor molecule binds to the cellular, to the receptor. Then it gets the cyclic EMP. These molecules have to go through their processes, acknowledge those, and then internalize it.
You cut out again, Dean.
Mitochondrial bodies, they just go right to the membrane and into the mitochondria. Thing that has we've evolved.
Hi, can I have you go through so the glucose, it's a lot harder to get in the cells than a ketone body.
We didn't have access to glucose the way we've had for the last 100 years. For the last 100 years, we've had glucose coming processed foods. Before, it would be in a bound form. It would be all low glycemic. Even if it was fruit, it was low glycemic. So when we did get glucose, the body had to process it in appropriate ways, in appropriate amounts. Now, all of a sudden, we get a lot of it. That's where insulin resistance comes into place. But ketones circumvent that. Okay, so you got a boost. But we know that long-term, short-term, you might actually feel better. But long-term, that causes inflammation, that causes cellular degradation, and sets into motion a whole slew of other pathways. It's not the glucose, the ketone, that's doing the work. It's the low caloric state that you can achieve with vegetables or with fruits and others. The low caloric state actually turns on longevity genes and turns off senescence genes. So it's not the ketones. It's the low caloric state. But without any data or data, in the face of a mountain of data over 80 years of whole food plant-based, because it's confirming what people want to hear, ketones, meat, ketones, bacon is back, ketones, butter is back.
Or intermittent fasting.
One paper gets on the cover of, not even paper, actually, a journalist who wrote something, gets on the cover of Time magazine, but 140,000 individuals, part of California teacher study that Aisha did this study on, 144,000 people, a Mediterranean diet, but the component of it, which was whole food, plant-based part of it, reduced stroke by 44%. That doesn't get on Time magazine.
Or other research projects.
Or many other papers like that because of confirmation bias. And it does make us sad. I guess you felt the frustration in my voice. But I think I'm hoping that ultimately prevails.
Yeah, I think more and more it's getting out of there. And, you know, it's... I'm glad that that your book is wonderful. The research that you're doing is fabulous, and we just keep fighting the fight.
Yes,
absolutely.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time to connect with me. I know it wasn't easy. We're in different time zones, and you're very, very busy. So I look forward to seeing more articles from you all, and we'll certainly point everybody to your website and to your clinic. Thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you for doing what you're doing, and we're glad to be connected with you, and look forward to staying connected from here on.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Of course. Thank our you. Pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I I hope you enjoyed the interview with Team Shirzai. I know I did. A few takeaway messages. The brain is an energy guzzler. Think about big Cadillac gas guzzler, so it needs a lot of energy. And the best way to provide it with energy is to work your legs. So as Nathan would say, squat you must. The other thing to take away is, you know, you need blood pressure, especially as people get older and they have vascular disease. So we actually need to perfuse our brains. Sometimes, you know, we get aggressive with, we want to get the blood pressure low. And people are on a lot of medications that actually make their blood pressure too low, and it can actually impede cognition. So, you know, that's something to watch and discuss with your plant-based doctor, hopefully. That they can get you off of your medications as you become plant-based and your blood pressure starts to improve. And again, you know, don't forget your legs are the biggest pump to get blood flow to your head. So keep your muscles strong, do your squats, walk, move yourself, and, you know, create new habits, even if you add habits on to already existing habits. So doing those toe raises while you're brushing your teeth, or while you're a few squats while you're watching the coffee come down, or waiting for something, the water to boil, make sure you continue to move. A few lunges here and there on the way to the TV set, on the way to the laundry room can really do a lot to help your leg, your leg strength. And, you know, growth factors that Dean talked about, cut out a little bit back at that point. But we generate growth factors when we do these exercises that actually help our neurons grow. So it's really important that we keep our muscles active and build muscle and don't decline over the year, because we know it's really easy to lose muscle and gain fat over the years. And so, you know, just remember all your actions and have consequences. And, you know, those theoretical cheat days that, you know, a lot of these websites put out that, oh, you can cheat, you know, and, or you can do the yo-yo diets. It's just not so. When you don't eat whole food, plant-based, and you're not getting your nutrients in, you're actually hurting yourself. So those things add up more than you know it, those days here and days there. So, you know, try to be conscious of your decisions every day. We'd love you to check out the website at drdelaney.com, drdelaney, and see what we have going on in our practice. There's recipes. We have a newsletter that comes out that gives you helpful hints. You can email me with questions at jamie@drdelaney.com. It's jami@drdelaney.com. Again, appreciate you taking time to listen today. You can also check out Addy Meinerich's website at naturallyrooted.com. Again, she's my registered dietitian, helps me out a lot in the practice. And again, this week I had the pleasure of having her in the office to do consults and help me out. So check out her website, check out drdelaney.com, and we'd love to help you achieve your optimal health and wellness. Thanks for listening.